This episode is brought to you by Diageo Bar Academy. Learn more at DiageoBarAcademy.com. That's D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Honeycomb Credit. Heritage Radio Network listeners can learn more about the power of community capital by visiting HoneycombCredit.com/HRN.
Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and it is Wednesday, May 5th, 2021. Happy Cinco de Mayo. This is the 287th episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talent in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is a wonderful chef and restaurateur who specializes in Afro-fusion cuisine, and I will introduce her fully in a moment. First, as I do in every show, I will start out with my PR tip. And then later we will have my speed round game industry news segment at the end of the show this week with a special guest, Lee Brian Schrager, the founder and director of Sobe Wine and Food Festival. And plus, as always, we will have my solo dining experience and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to believe in yourself. Believe in your capabilities, your desires, and your dreams, and that you can accomplish anything with the right mindset. Trust what comes from your heart and soul and never underestimate it. Be your own biggest cheerleader, knowing that anything is possible if you believe. That's my tip today. Now I'm thrilled to have my guest joining me. It is Diana Tandia, the chef and owner of Berber Street Food, an African cafe in New York City's West Village, featuring Afro-fusion cuisine. Diana, who is from Mauritania, Africa, moved to New York City in 2001 and began working as a server in high-end restaurants, including Danielle, Per Se, and Brasserie Rollman, while attending college. She then went on to study at the French Culinary Institute in 2006, where she developed her own unique style and flair. Diana then gained more experience in kitchens, returning to Danielle, as well as at Spice Market and Gramercy Tavern, among others. Her culinary philosophy and passion reflects the growing trend towards a healthier and down-to-earth lifestyle. So hi, Diana. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sherry. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you. I know we've been trying to make this happen for a little while. So it's great we're doing it today. And I always start out with my guests to find out about their background. And I'm very intrigued by yours because you grew up in Africa, where I and it's on my list of must visit places.
Oh yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your childhood and how your family, if they influenced your career in cooking.
Yes, originally I'm from West Africa, which I call a fairy tale country. It's located in the West North. And I was raised in two families. My mom is from like a Berber tribe, and my dad is Sarajole with the Senegalese roots. So I was raised in two different cultures, Mauritania, and I spent a lot of time in my teenager life in Senegal. So growing up at young age, I watched my family making food from scratch. So I developed a really great relationship with food. And during my teenager time, I spent a lot of time in the kitchen helping our cooks and my aunt to make food from scratch. So I had that passion of food with me since I was young.
So when you moved to New York, it was at that time you weren't thinking of a culinary career, but it was more you're working restaurants to support yourself?
Not really, because I moved in New York in 2001 after I graduated high school, because my dad is a diplomat. So I guess, I don't know if you can relate in that, but being African, you're always told what to do and what. Either you can be an engineer, a doctor, or a nurse or something. My parents wanted me really to follow their path. So I came here and I wanted to major in political science. And while I was going to college, I needed to support myself. But since French was my first language, it was easier for me to find a job in a French restaurant. And a friend of mine just recommended me at Daniel, and I landed to work at Daniel Boulud as a hostess. And then I moved as a waitress. And while I was there, I really fell in love with the elegant service and the kitchen brigade. And my inner voice always been telling me, follow your passion. But I was always scared to speak up because I did not know how my mom will react to my decision being a chef. Because growing up in Africa, I grew up with maids and cooks. So being a chef at that time wasn't trendy at all. And it was like on the bottom of the shelf.
Yeah, so that, but then you decided to take the leap or to just go for it and go to cooking.
Then I started working for free. I was going to college, and my free time and waiting table, I asked one of the pastry chef at Roulement at that time, BLT, who's like Laurent Tounonder, used to be my chef after I left Daniel. So I was working at Brasserie Roulement as a waitress. I asked the chef, the pastry chef, there's any way I can help you during the weekend for free? I don't need to be paid. And he was like one of my first mentor, Ayman, and told me to follow my dream. Out of nowhere, I just took a big leap of faith and went into studying the culinary art in 2006 at the French Culinary.
And then what led you to open your own restaurant? Was that when you started cooking, did you think one day you would have your own place, or that was something that developed or came as, you know, later?
Being at young age, eating fresh food, seeing like everything made from scratch, I was very blessed to be exposed to that. And working in fine dining opens up my eyes with the beautiful ingredient. Everything is fresh, the elegant service. And it was a kitchen brigade. You really need to be disciplined in order to work in fine dining. And what really opened my mind to open my restaurant was like after I left fine dining, I felt like I had a call. Unfortunately, I lost my mom in 2016. So I left to Asia again, and I went to Bali for a silent retreat. So when I went to a silent retreat, I was so much in pain and I needed to heal. And I asked the divine spirit for guidance in my purpose in life. So when I came back in New York, then I realized, wow, I am ready. I wanted to open something, but I wanted to go back to my roots. I know it's been confusing for people. How come I can do fine dining all these years, travel the world, and when I come back to New York, open an African restaurant, which is based on a concept of street food?
Yeah, well, I mean, how have you, I mean, the decision is, I think it's amazing that you would take your fine dining background and be able to, you know, apply it to anything you wanted to do with doing street food. But how has that been with consumers' perception from when you opened and even till now? Because there aren't, you know, even living in New York City, I feel African cuisine is still pretty much, I don't know, under the radar, or it's just
underrepresented.
Not talked about.
Exactly, because what I did is basically when I wanted to open Berber street food, Berber is just a tribe. A lot of people get confused with Berber thinking like it's the spice from Ethiopia. It's a tribe. It's like a tribe from North Africa, from Morocco. So I say, I'm going to take Berber and call it street food. And then I combine both because I felt like African cuisine, and you said it really well, is really underrepresented in the culinary world. When you talk about African food, it's either people think it's too spicy or not healthy. So since God gave me the voice to be able to work in fine dining and travel the world, so I wanted to educate people. Then I say, okay, how about we do African cuisine and then with a flair of French and Asian? Because people don't understand the African diet. When you talk about African food, it's basically the food is like based on a wholesome diet instead of like a processed food. So that's what really led me to open the Berber street food, to educate people and talk about, to put basically African cuisine on the map.
So what are some of your signature dishes, or if someone coming there the first time, what would you recommend for them to get?
Well, definitely my menu tells a story. We have like a lot of dishes that crisscross and that can educate you about African slavery that can educate you about the diet of being vegan, which is very trendy right now. So the best dish of my, like, which put me really, is like the Berber feast, which is like a leg of lamb, which we marinated 24 hours with a lot of bold spices. We blend, which I blend myself, and it's marinated for 24 hours. Then we grill it and serve it in a beautiful chunk ball. So the presentation is very eye-catching, and we invest a lot of time and love in our dishes. Then we have the mafia part, which is vegan, because I have a big vegan menu, which is a peanut butter sauce we cook in okra, and it's served with cassava fufu. Fufu is like a pounded cassava, which is like a very nutrient, and that keep you going all day. Then we have the akara. I'm sure you're a foodie, you should know about the akara, which is the black IP fritter. The only place you will see akara beside Africa will be in Brazil, in Bahia, and they call it acarajé. And also I serve the camel, which was big, like a big hit in, because people were intrigued, where do I find camel and what makes me serve camel, which is the main meat in my country where I'm from, Mauritania.
Wow, I mean, I'm just listening to you and I'm getting hungry. And I have to say, when I was on your website looking around, and also I was like, I have to get back down to your restaurant. You have so many amazing dishes. And I also, it's very user-friendly as well, because you have pictures and descriptions on your website. So someone not as familiar with your food, it makes it, you know, very easy to, you know, see what you're offering and want to come visit.
Yeah, because I need it, because I know a lot of restaurants, especially fine dining, they will give you the main ingredient, they use, that's it. But since I'm doing a cuisine which is very different, underrepresented, I need to take another step and make sure I describe, put like beautiful pictures at the same time, also describe the food so people can be comfortable. Because it's a type of cuisine where like a lot of Westerners are not accustomed to it. They think it's spicy. They think they have no idea when they sit. And a lot of my customers will ask me, oh, I never had African food. I don't like spicy food. The only answer I give them is like, how about you sit? My food will speak to you.
Yeah, it makes me think of, I guess, from more my childhood or people like not being as familiar with Indian cuisine and thinking that it's only curry or spicy. And Indian cuisine has become actually my solo dining experience. I'm going to talk about a place that just opened, but it's definitely become, at least in New York, more mainstream. And I feel African cuisine isn't there yet, but I feel with what you're doing and educating people and serving, you know, amazing food, is, you know, you're a big part of the movement.
Oh, definitely. I believe in that. And what makes us unique also is the menu is seasonal. Every 3 months I change the menu, but I always keep the classic dishes. Because when you see Africa has 54 countries, so 54 countries, I cannot put 54 countries at the same time. So what I do every 3 months, I rotate the menu and I feature different dishes in different countries around Africa, which makes it exciting but a bit challenging also.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's amazing point. Like sometimes I talk about African cuisine and I forget that it's. So it's a whole continent. It's not just one little region.
Exactly. Yeah.
And when I was down there a couple months ago, and I got a bit of a tasting for your empanadas, and I mean your food is so flavorful and delicious. I wanted to talk a little bit about what's happened in this past year, because at that time when I was down, there was limited outdoor dining or sat outside, but did you have indoor before? Or
I did have like 16 seat. But the main concept when I opened Berber Street Food, because before I opened Berber Street Food, I used to do a lot of catering. Living in Tribeca is a blessing because we have a lot of rooftop. All my friends always invite me, say, oh, I have a party for 10 people or 20. Can you cater for me? And also they call Tribeca the nursery of New York City. There's a lot of kids. That's the best place to raise a kid. So I did a lot of birthdays, and most of my friends also, they own houses in the Hampton. So I spend a lot of time in the Hampton catering. So the demand was so big, but I could not find the kitchen. I was struggling going to Brooklyn. So I was working on the West Village one day, and I saw that small spot. So the main idea was basically to open Bubble Street Food, cater, and then while I'm catering, I'm just going to sell small stuff. Then the write-up got big. Everybody loved the food, so that's why I end up having the inside. But it wasn't part of my plan to have people in. It was just like a takeout. At the same time, I will continue doing my catering. And after then, we had big corporate. Before COVID, we were doing really good because after all the write-up and people enjoying my food, sampling it, we were doing a lot of corporate events, especially corporate lunch. And we had a lot of corporate account for lunch and dinner. And after COVID hit, it was very challenging because my sales went really down and I had to let go half of my team because I couldn't pay them anymore. Unfortunately, everybody works from home. No one was ordering corporate dinner or lunch. So I had to change the whole concept, make the kitchen bigger, and just rely on a beautiful day. If it's a great day, we have our outdoor open and we're just doing now takeout. And people still miss the plating because everything is very earthy, the way we plate, the wooden board we use. So I still have like an 8-seat outside, first come, first serve. So it's been a very challenging time for me to be a small business and to serve a unique cuisine, which is not exposed to the Western world. So I have to change. And also the only thing that saved me, I do have a lot of regulars and the newcomers and the trend of being vegan. So I think sometimes obstacle can be a blessing. That give me a time to sit back, think deeply, how can I bring more customers? And since I added like more vegan option and make it big, so I see like a lot of newcomer coming to try my food. But still, I have not really make money. And on top of that, I supervise everything. I work long hours. I am the chef with two great cooks behind me that are supporting me. I do the service. I am the cashier. But also that makes me give me the chance to be very close to my customers, to listen to them and to be in touch.
Wow. Yeah. No, I feel for you. And I know, I mean, chef, owner, your business and this just, I mean, it's been such a hard year. But it is great. You have your regulars and that I feel like you've figured out how to, I hate to say survive, but I guess you have.
Yeah. Right now I'm just surviving. The money is not yet dead because I'm not paying myself. And on top of that, having a family, it suffer a little bit because I spend a lot of time. I work between 12 to 13 or 14 hours a day because I'm trying to juggle everything. But I'm a big believer. I believe in myself, and I took a big leap of faith to open this place. I will do my best until like my last breath to say, okay, at least I try. But I am not somebody who quit that easy.
Yeah, no, I have great admiration for you and everything you do. And for the future, do you think you would, do you have any goals to maybe open other restaurants or move spaces, or you're just, or as of now, you're content? I mean, you're not content, but your location in the West Village, I mean, you're on an amazing block. You're very, I love where you are located and I think it's prime.
Yeah, absolutely. This is my baby because it's very personal to me. I started from zero, like the decor and everything. I didn't pay anyone. It was just my partner and I. We worked so hard to make it up. So I'm a big believer the universe has so much to offer. And I want to reach my potential, my highest potential in the culinary world. So I would love to expand. And my biggest goal is basically to put African food on the map, especially in the culinary world. How about open a restaurant which is going to be a fine dining, like African food? So I have a lot of vision, but right now I just need to focus to see how can I make this place stable. And since it's already like we got great write-up, it's on the map, but definitely I have great, great, great goals, and hopefully the universe will support me to achieve them.
Yeah, no, you have gotten amazing press and write-ups of, you know, on your food and concept, and well deserved. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about other African restaurants or places maybe I've been to in the city. And I thought of Taranga, and I've been up to Afrikeen in Harlem, and Buna Cafe over in Bushwick area. But is there a strong community among restaurateurs who are doing African cuisine in New York?
Not really, because sadly, to be honest, I think we need like, I don't know, Pierre is like a great, like he's a good friend, he's a brother to me. We need really to combine our forces and try like really to do something about the African restaurant, because I feel like we are still very, very underrepresented.
Yeah. Yeah, I met him. He's gotten some nice press too, but you're right. Yeah. I think you are.
He's older than me. He's really older than me. And I always admire him because he was doing something bold. I think what saved me is like my culinary background, and I'm bold. The fact I wanted to open my restaurant in the middle of the West Village, which is like a great area to attract customers. And I think I did my best, but still it's going to be sad. The way like Indian food and Mexican food is represented, I will do my best to make sure African food will be the next one to be represented, because our diet is amazing. I know the Mediterranean diet got a lot of press, but if people get a chance to sit down and come to my restaurant or go to Pierre or go to Kine or Buna and sit down and take more time to enjoy African food, they will understand the food is fresh, it's flavorful, it's authentic, and it's based on grain. Now you see the new trend is quinoa, the new trend is funyo, the new trend is moringa. All these products are from Africa, but here they call it the superfood. But in Africa, we've been eating that since like many, many centuries.
Yeah. So where do you source your products from? Is that easy or hard for you to get here?
Because basically for my blend, all my spices, I make them. I buy them in bulk and I roast them. All the spices you will taste at my place, I make them. My hot sauces, I make them. The only thing that give me a little trouble is my camel kofta, because I source it in Australia. And sometimes the shipping can be super expensive. But beside that, I deal with different like vendors. Some people that come from like Ghana will bring me something. But with the pandemic, I had a hard time sourcing my product. And I do seasonal. And since I'm a small restaurant, I don't buy in bulk. I just buy whatever I need for the month. And when it's like when I'm low in stock, I would already order again. For vegetables and my meat product, I go local. I go to Pino. He's been in the West Village more than 30 years. That's where I get all my meat. So I know my sources. And for my vegetables, it's every day. I deal with Riviera. I deal with Baldor and with small farmers. So basically everything is fresh. And I know the source.
Yeah, well, makes sense. And I'm glad having those relationships is definitely great.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely important to know where you're sourcing your product. It's just I don't go online, or since I'm not big and I cook everything fresh, it's important to me to know. And then I just want to take the concept like home. Every morning, I never remember seeing our maids opening the fridge to cook something. Every morning she has like her basket and she's heading to the market.
Yeah. Well, I love that approach, and I think it's wonderful that you're able to do that. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you my question for my last guest. So on episode 286, I had on Gavin Kaysen. He's the chef and founder of Soigne Hospitality Group, which includes Spoon and Stable, Demi, Bellacourt Bakery at Cooks, and Crocus Hill of Crocus Hill. He's also the co-founder of Heart of the House Foundation, and he's a featured chef in Fiden's Today's Special, 20 Leading Chefs Choose 100 Emerging Chefs. So his question, if you were asked to change a dish from your culture by a guest, such as make it vegan, how would you respond to that? He also said, if you were able to cook your food exactly how you wanted to and tell and story tell your cuisine, would you alter the way that you cook?
So definitely, like, absolutely, I would be open to change the dish to a vegan, because I've been very lucky to be able to expose to different cuisine and style of cooking. So I wouldn't have a problem to change a regular dish to a vegan dish.
Okay. Do you get requests like that often?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because like, that's why when you look at my menu, I try to be fair. The vegan menu is called African Vegan Land, and the meat menu is called Meat Explorer. So when you look at the menus, basically it's two menus identical, but I will take whatever is meat and substitute with something else to make it vegan. And I felt like everybody's happy. You can have a partner who's vegan, but you can have the same meal, but eating different. You can eat the same meal, but in a different way. When can have it vegan, when can have it with meat.
Yeah, well, best of both worlds, and you're...
Exactly, and you need to follow the trend right now. So I'm very comfortable doing that.
Yeah, the big news this week, or one of the main stories, was about how 11 Madison Park is going vegan.
Oh, I can wait. When I read it, I can wait. I'm so excited, and I think the pandemic really helped every chef to sit down and think about deeply, because it's about change. This is change. I think like that's true. The universe needed to reset. Mother Earth needed to reset. But as a chef also, we needed to reset the way we cook and to change, not just to know everything has to be meat. We can go plant-based and make it flavorful and educate people, because that's our journey as a chef, to feed people, but we can educate them to eat in a healthiest way. Don't get me wrong. I do still respect people who eat meat. But also, I think it is time for us to go back to Mother Earth and get our sources from there.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, I ran into you at Dirt Candy.
Exactly. So. Yeah, because I don't eat red meat. And believe it or not, coming from Mauritania, which is the diet is 99% red meat. We eat a lot of cow, camel, and lamb. So being a chef, it was a bit like, how come I serve this? How can I be a chef and be, I'm not vegan, but I don't eat red meat. But the vegan menu make more sense to me. And since I really make my vegan menu bigger, I see people appreciate it, and that bring me more customers. Especially like, we have a lot of students from NYU. They love vegan food, the newcomers. So people are very excited about my vegan menu.
Yeah, well.
Okay, so no one is left out.
Yeah, no one is, and you're definitely, I guess you talk, you know, we're talking about this as a trend, but you're ahead of the curve, maybe.
Oh, yeah, definitely, because traveling the world really opened my eyes to know you can eat a plant-based and nourish your soul without feeling deprived of something. And also, you need to respect people who want to eat meat. I'm in both worlds. I'm just trying to be fair and to attract more customers.
Yeah, well, smart. Okay,
yeah.
So before we take a break, one more question. Just what advice would you give to someone who's maybe listening and wants to be a chef, a restaurateur? And what would you recommend as far as a career path?
Well, to say about me, it's like you need to be authentic and make sure you do it with love and passion. Because it's a very, very, very hard job. It's not meant for everyone. So if you want to be a chef, you got to make sure you go with your heart and you cook from the heart. But you have to be at service with people and you need to be patient. It's not something you jump in and you need to be very, very patient, because it takes like a hard labor, endurance to climb the ladder.
Yeah, well, good advice. And I'm so impressed by you. I just, and I really do. I'm like craving your food so badly right now.
Thank you. Stop by anytime. We're there. And the patio is cute. So whenever you're ready, we're there.
Well, I will be coming, and we will take a little break right now, and then we will come back and we'll have my speed round game, we'll have my solo dining experience, and the final question. And then at the end of the show, we will have industry news, my special segment with Lee Brian Schrager.
Okay, so, awesome.
So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Diana Tandia. She is the chef and owner of Berber Street Food, an African cafe in New York City's West Village featuring African street food. So, Diana, it's time for my speed round. What this is I'm going to name a couple things and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat in.
Wine, beer, cocktail, mocktail, or champagne?
Mocktail.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
Tasting menu.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef counter.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
All-inclusive charge.
Fine dining or casual eats?
Casual eats.
Couple more. Cooking in Bali or in Laos?
In Laos.
You did both.
I just bought it in Laos.
Well, believe it or not, I have been to both places, which I'm impressed
really?
With. Yes.
Beautiful places.
Beautiful.
Nothing to say. I think Bali is like really like now, Bali is not that authentic compared to Laos. Laos is still very untouched. Not that many people go to Laos.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that's why I'm kind of amazed. I have been there, but well, to both. But you're right. Laos is definitely more. I don't know.
I spend a lot of time in. I know Bali really well because I spend a lot of summer in Bali. But Laos is very untouched, and believe it or not, there's like the French influence. So the best crepe I ever had on the street is from Laos.
Oh wow.
Yeah, okay. So Laos is very, very untouched compared to Bali.
Wow. Wasn't sure how you'd answer that one, but now I know. Okay. two more. I have cheese plate or dessert?
A dessert.
And Manhattan or Brooklyn?
Manhattan.
Fabulous. That's the game.
Thank you. That's really fun.
Well, you were quick. Didn't stump you on any of them.
Sorry?
I didn't stump you on any of them. Usually people get stuck.
Well, I guess my brain has the chef work really fast, so I really need to step up, you know?
Yeah, and who's that? So as I mentioned, for industry news, we're changing things up today. I'm going to have an industry news segment at the end of the show with a special interview with Lee Brian Schrager. He's the founder and director of the Food Network and Cooking Channel, South Beach Wine and Food Festival, presented by Capital One, which is taking place May 20th to 23rd in South Beach. So stay tuned for that. Mm-hmm. I do have a couple of announcements. Ellen Bennett, who was a guest on my episode 219, she's the founder and CEO of multi-million-dollar empire Headley and Bennett, and she's known as the Apron Lady. Well, she has a brand new book out called Dream First, Details Later, How to Quit Overthinking and Make It Happen. Ellen is amazing. I have just given her a shout out. Go check out her book. I'm sure it's perfect for any aspiring entrepreneurs. And congratulations to her. Just a reminder that alltheindustry.com/merch is the place to go if you'd like to get some All in the Industry hats or any other items we have. And the hats, I'm donating 100% of the sales to the Independent Restaurant Coalition for any purchases through May 31st. So go on there and get some All in the Industry hats and other fun stuff that we have. Okay, for solo dining this week, here's my experience. It's at Damaka. So here's the rundown. The location, 119 Delancey Street at the New Essex Market, Lower East Side, New York City. The concept, unapologetic Indian restaurant serving provincial Indian cuisine. The website says Damaka is explosive, the other side of India, the forgotten side of India. The owners are Chef Chintan Padia and Rani Mazumdar, who also own Ada Indian Canteen and Rahi, which are popular Indian restaurants in New York City. So why'd I go? Well, this was a new place. I heard fabulous things about it, and I love Indian food. So my experience, I had an early dinner reservation on, I made it through Resy. Again, I've talked about this in the show. I made it for two people because they don't usually offer reservations for one on these apps. And so I'm going to say now, unapologetically, I showed up as one, but I am always apologetic. I do always feel bad. I hope they want me as a solo diner. And so okay. far, everyone has.
I will take that from you then. So since like Resy only takes two, sometimes it's so hard. Sometimes I just want to go by myself. And I realize they want... It's a good trick then.
Well, I just, I mean, if it's not, I mean, you can call the restaurant and see, but yeah, it just seems a lot of times they don't set up the system for one. Maybe as I continue to talk about solo dining experiences, it will get more popular and there will be that option. But for now, I showed up myself. They were very welcoming. I sat at a two top. Inside this indoor dining experience I had, I've met Ronnie before and he recognized me, the owner, and because I had dined at Rahi with my friend Pichet Ong, and he remembered me from that. So he came over, he said hi, we had a nice chat, and I enjoyed my dinner. So what did I get? I got the poplet fry with ginger, cumin, and green chutney. I also got their pressure cooker pulao chicken with basmati rice and garam masala. I got a side of paratha, and for dessert, chenna poda, which is the only dessert that they offer. My take, I loved the poplet fry. It's a fish fry. They told me to eat it with my hands because I was kind of delicately trying to use a knife and fork. They're like, just pick it up. Get in there. So I got in there. It was delicious. The chicken was really, really flavorful too. Everything had a bit of heat to it. So the bread was nice to complement it. And this dessert, it's like a warm and spongy dish that was served in a tiny clay pot with a wooden spoon. It was delicious. I don't even know. It was just really, I can see why they have this one dessert they're doing because it's really good. So the ambiance, I'd say it's kind of like a more of an urban atmosphere. It's got high ceilings. It has colorful art in the walls. It's part of the Essex Market on street level, I guess you'd say. And has big windows facing the street, and there's a large patio outside because they're doing outdoor dining as well. So I'd say it's perfect for sharing Indian food with friends. Interesting tidbit. They were supposed to open early last year. Due to COVID, they got delayed, so I'm glad they got open now. So I have two personal fun facts. The first one is while I was dining, a woman came over to me. Her name was Margot, and she knew me from my show, this show. She was a listener, and she asked me if I was doing my solo dining experience. So I said, well, yes, I certainly am. So hi, Margot. Thanks for saying hi and being a fan. And I also had a solo dining experience recently at another Indian restaurant that opened called Sona, which is owned by, the co-owner is David Rabin, who was on my episode 169. And this, I had a wonderful experience. I might talk about it on a later show. It's a little more of an, I'd say, elegant, sophisticated dining room. And compared to Damaco, is a little more casual. Both were wonderful, and I recommend them both. The cost of my meal at Damaco was $42. That's not including tax gratuity. Plus, Ronnie had sent out the dessert, so that was complimentary. Would I go back? Yes, as I said, I would. There's a lot of sections of the menu I didn't even get to because I was solo. The website is damaka.nyc. That's D-H-A-M-A-K-A .nyc. So there. Diana, have you been there?
No, not. I'm taking notes right now. I know, like, but I'm taking notes. And it's so funny. I was in Africa and I saw you. You went to Wayan, which is one of my favorite places I dine. Frederick, yeah, Wayan.
Oh, and I love that restaurant. It's definitely one of my favorites. And I sat, that was me sitting outside in the cold winter in a little, like, nook area enjoying dinner.
And there's another one I've been like last week, which really impressed me. It's owned by the same group. One is called Lady Bird in the East Village, and the other one is Samsaran, which is the first Filipino vegan restaurant in New York City.
Oh, wow. I haven't been there. I will have to go.
Yeah. Usually, whenever, the experience is very amazing because everything is served on a big tray of banana leaves. It's like a communal table, but there's no plates. Everything is served on a banana leaf, and it's vegan.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah, very impressive. There's so many restaurants in New York City. Every day you walk, you will discover something new.
There are, and I've always been overwhelmed by it, I guess, this past year with things slowing down, and it just, it became a different sort of figuring out where to go, like what's open, what feels safe, what, you know, where. But now as we're, you know, right now we're starting, like lots of restaurants are reopening, and it's, the city's really coming back to life, I feel.
But don't you think so, having the outdoor dining outside, the patio, it gives the character to New York. It's very elegant. Sometimes I can feel I'm in Italy. Sometimes I feel I'm in Paris or somewhere in Europe. I think it gives a lot of charm to the city.
Yes, I definitely think I think it's brought a lot of character, and it's amazing to see what restaurateurs have done to create very welcoming outdoor spaces. And
yes.
I think
some
there's
of them have.
Like, as I said, the block you're on, like you have great neighbors, restaurant neighbors. Like, it's a very lively area, I think.
Amazing. And I'm very blessed to be in that, like right next to that trendy restaurant. I'm sure you know Nami Nuri.
Yes, I think I did a solo dining experience of theirs.
Yeah, it's a great place. It's a trendy place to go. People who like to take Instagram pictures. So it doesn't hurt me because it brings me a lot of customers. I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah. I like their stuff. Mm-hmm. It's I don't know.
Yeah, it's cute.
I took it to go once last year.
Oh, really? You have to come back and sit down and see it. I think it's a different approach, and it's cute. So basically, a lot of people who will never think about African food will go there. The next day, they will come to me telling me, we were having dinner, and we saw your menu look so interesting. That's why we're here. That block is very interesting.
Well, yeah, it is. Well, and that's sushi. They're doing something completely different than what you're doing. But people who love food would, you know, it attracts them to other restaurants.
Yeah, definitely.
So, okay. Mm-hmm. So let's do, for the final question, ask you to ask a question for my next guest. So I'm having on Adam Fournier. He is a West Coast-based bartender who was recently named the 2021 U.S. Bartender of the Year in the USBG Presents World Class sponsored by Diageo competition. So he won Bartender of the Year, which is amazing. So Diana, what would you like to ask Adam?
So I would like to know, can a restaurant can find success just serving a mocktail drinks menu?
Ooh, as someone that doesn't drink, I really like the question.
Yes, because I don't drink alcohol, that's why.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, really? Wow, really? So we have to, that's why I want, that's really, when you told me about him, I was so excited because I always wanted to ask that question to someone who's a bartender.
I'm going to find out. And actually, you know, I'll say, I think as you're talking a lot about how, you know, vegan is on trend or becoming more popular, I think non-alcoholic drinks are the same, becoming a lot more popular.
Definitely. Yeah.
I see the choices on menus are just so much better than they were 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah, because I feel like not drinking alcohol and I'm always outside dining, I feel like sometimes I don't feel special because I don't want to just have a mojito. I want to see something more intriguing, more exciting, like the same way I'm doing as a chef and other chef to bring the vegan menu exciting. That's why I wanted to find out with like a well-known bartender if a restaurant can be successful just serving a mocktail drinks menu.
Well, I will find out. And what at your restaurant, what do you have?
I do not have because when I opened, I wasn't sure because like I said earlier, that place was meant for catering. And after all the write-up, we got so lucky to have people coming to sit down. So right now, we only do homemade juices. Everything is freshly made at the cafe. Yeah, but I'm thinking about, that's why I wanted to find out if there's any way I can just be trendy and serve mocktails. But that's like, this is my next step. That's why I want to find out from a well-known bartender.
I feel this, I mean, there's so much importance now, even more so in your question, and we will find out.
Okay, but we still do like a BYOB, you can bring your own bottle, but still I want to see if I don't have to get a liquor license and just serve mocktail, how people will react to that.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Okay, we will find out, and... thank you so much. I love chatting with you. I'm great to get to know you better, and I can't wait to get back to Berber Street Food and see you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure, and thank you for allowing me to share my story. And hopefully from this, we will see more people or adventurous eaters coming to try African food.
Yes, I hope so too.
Yeah, thank you so much, Barry. And then let's catch up or whenever you get a chance, contact me. I will contact you so we can do, we can have dinner one night.
Yes, yes. We can make a reservation for two together. How about that?
Definitely. But in the meantime, I will follow your path with the solo dining sometime.
Thank you.
Thank you so much and have a lovely evening.
We're going to take a break and we'll come back with my industry news segment with my special guest, Lee Brian Schrager, the founder and director of the Food Network and Cooking Channel South Beach Wine and Food Festival presented by Capital One. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Managing a bar requires understanding more than just drinks. At Diageo Bar Academy, you'll find free training and resources to optimize operations, profitability, teamwork, and more, including bar management to step up your social media marketing and create profitable menus, masterclass events with global industry experts, and finance and budgeting tools to increase profit margins. Stay informed, inspired, and connected to grow your career or business by joining Diageo Bar Academy today. Visit DiageoBarAcademy.com. That's D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com. Become a member and sign up for the newsletter. It's completely free, and you will be amazed at all they have to offer. That's DiageoBarAcademy.com. D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Honeycomb Credit. Heritage Radio Network listeners can learn more about the power of community capital by visiting honeycombcredit.com/HRN. We all know that food businesses like yours are the backbone of your community. You make your neighborhood a more delicious place to be, and your customers are hungry for more. Food businesses across the country are working with Honeycomb to open new locations, buy equipment, and grow. You too can unlock fair growth capital by allowing your community to invest directly into your business. A crowdfunded loan from Honeycomb deepens your customer relationships and gives them a whole new way to engage with your business. You'll also get access to thousands of local investors in the Honeycomb network who are passionate about seeing food businesses succeed. Honeycomb is the community bank of the 21st century. Fair rates, flexible terms, and no prepayment penalties. Honeycomb has proven to be an invaluable growth tool for all kinds of businesses, from James Beard-nominated restaurants and upstart food trucks to organic farms and award-winning breweries. Best of all, with Honeycomb, you're paying back your neighbors, not big banks. To learn more about how Honeycomb Credit can help grow your business while building vibrant, financially empowered neighborhoods, visit honeycombcredit.com/HRN.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer, and for industry news this week, I have a special guest joining me. It is Lee Brian Schrager, the founder and director of the Food Network and Cooking Channel South Beach Wine and Food Festival, presented by Capital One. So hi, Lee. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be back. Good to connect with you again.
Yeah, it really is. I feel it's you've become a little bit of a regular every couple years coming back and sharing news with me and my listeners. So I love it.
I love a good tradition.
Yes. And speaking of which, we have a great tradition to start to talk about with South Beach. So before we get into it, why don't you tell me a little bit about this past year, what it's been like? How have you been?
Well, what's it been like, as you can imagine, in my hat at Southern Glazers Wine and Spirits, where I handle communications, it's been an incredibly busy time in the wine and spirit industry, as you've read and seen. From the planning of festival, it's been a very frustrating time. You know, we've normally celebrated our festival every year in February, and for obvious reasons, we moved it to May, and we've had to start and go 25 different times with different, guidelines and different directives from our government here. But I feel like we are finally in a good place to present, a really safe and comfortable festival May 20th through 23rd down here in South Beach.
Yeah, it's been a very trying year, and I'm sure I can't even imagine what it was like on your end with like start stop or planning and having to reschedule. But yes, May 20th, 23rd, it's coming up. I'm so excited to get down there for it. So, and I can't believe it's your 20th anniversary. Like, how did time go that quickly, right?
That's what happens as we get old, but it's 20 years, that's for sure.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about what's happening this year with the festival. How's it going to look the same and look different than years in the past?
Well, it's going to, look and feel different, obviously, for lots of, reasons we all know about, all your listeners know about. But, the number one priority for us was making sure we could come back in the safest and most comfortable way. That's really been our focus all along. And, everything's really changed. We have our signature events that will be back and our, really upscale dinners that will be back. Every event is outdoors this year. Our signature events like Best of the Best, that was one night indoors at the Ballroom of the Fountain Blue, will be held over two nights outdoors at the Fountain Blue. Our grand tasting, which is normally one large session on Saturday and Sunday of festival weekend, will now be two sessions, a morning and afternoon session of the festival weekend. And our big, blowout events like Burger Bash and Bubble Q will be in two sessions as well, an early and late session. So that a tent that used to accommodate 4,000 people at one time will now have two sessions, and each session will be 1,000 people. So that same tent you were in before for 4,000 will hold 1,000. So you can imagine what a great experience that's going to be. The same number of chefs, the same size tent, but spread out, for only 1,000 people rather than 4,000.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I did see when I was going through your website and saw, you have so many events. It's amazing the production that you've always put on and are going to be doing this year. And when I saw Best of the Best was on two nights and I saw it was outdoors, I thought that was really exciting as a change. And also, it's always challenging to try to get to so many of the events because things sometimes happen at the same time. And so it kind of gives more opportunity as well to consumers.
Absolutely. This will probably be one of the more popular consumer years in the sense of no lines and, different options, early, late sessions. So it really gives consumers more opportunity. So, who knows? It may be so successful that we keep it up. So out of something kind of devastating for the whole industry, it may end up to be a good thing for us as soon as we can figure out how to do this correctly and move on.
Right. I also saw you had a new event at the deck at Island Gardens, which is brand new as well. I think it said it was a sunset happy hour.
Actually, it's a great venue. Right? It's right across from the Children's Museum in Miami. It's actually Miami Beach, I'm guessing. But it's a sunset happy hour hosted by Guy Fieri with a special performance by Sammy Hagar. And it's kind of great local foods. It will be Georgia stone crabs and Cuban sandwiches and croquetas from Versailles and key lime pie from Fireman Derek. Plus the venue itself has a great chef who will be doing stations and also complimented by great drinks from Santo, Guy Fieri's tequila with Sammy Hagar.
Wow, awesome. So what are the protocols for people who want to attend with COVID? What are the requirements?
Well, I mean, there are lots of requirements. I mean, just getting into it, you'll have to download an app called SimCheck, and you'll have to have, you know, do an attestation that you've not been, that you've either been vaccinated or that you have tested negative to a PCR test 3 days prior to the event. Once you get into the event, you know, there's mandatory mask wearing, except when you're eating at a table. So there'll be lots of seating this year. The lines and the tents are going to be all going one way rather than people going, you know, all directions. So a lot more emphasis on, you know, keeping it flowing smoothly and quickly. But for the most part, it's really that attestation and wearing the masks throughout.
Yeah, well, it's I think it's important and great you're putting safety first, and that South Beach is, I mean, traditionally it's been being on the beach that an outdoor event and a lot of opportunity to be outside. So I think that's wonderful that that is where most of your events are happening.
Well, all the events, everything will be outside.
Oh, everything. Okay.
Yep. Nothing inside.
Amazing. What about, let's just talk a little bit about New York City Wine and Food Festival as your other big festival project. What are your plans for that? Is it moving forward for October?
Sure. It will be October 14th through 17th. And we, you know, are continuing, well, we're beginning to map out a program. But it, we are our new home for our signature, you know, grand tasting will be the Glass House on the West Side Highway. And our nighttime signature events will take place at the Intrepid. So, again, new locations for both events, allowing us more space and opportunities to control everything in the safest and most comfortable environment. But definitely happening October 14th through 17th.
Awesome. Well, that's just down the block from me, the Intrepid. So,
right there.
Well, I look forward to that as well. And yeah, I'm so excited for this year and to get down to Miami. And I give you and your team a lot of credit for being, you know, being patient and then being able to move forward and celebrate your 20th.
Well, it was very important for us to come back and support the industry. So although our tagline has always been eat, drink, educate, this year it has been amended to be eat, drink, educate, and support local. A lot of emphasis on relief and recovery for our great partners who have been supporting us for 20 years in South Florida.
Yeah, I love that. And that just, so are the chefs involved this year mostly South Florida based, or are you have people coming in from all over the country?
Sure. Yeah. We bring in about 400 people from across the country, or actually across the globe. This year will be just under 300. So a reduction of about 25%. But remember, we have so many great talents here in South Florida now, you know, with Jean George being here and Thomas Keller and Daniel Ballou and Fabio Trabiocchi. Those are now all local talents for us. So, you know, it's an extraordinary lineup of talent and really something for everyone this year.
Yeah, absolutely. People, I mean, I know it's been in the news a bunch about how there's New York City restaurants that have opened down in Miami from Cote and Carbone and Pastis is coming. And so yeah. Miami has definitely people are talking about what's happening there in the dining scene.
Everyone's here. That's no question about it. All the New Yorkers are here and all the restaurants are here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, amazing. So anything else you want to add?
Nope, just happy to be back. And that's what we're most looking forward to, being back in the safest, most comfortable way to eat, drink, educate, and of course, support local. And we appreciate your support all these years and looking forward to seeing you on the beach.
Thank you. I look forward to seeing you too. I'm really thrilled to get back down there and be a part of it. And for people who want to join, and you should, go to sobewff.org. That's sobewff.org, and check out the lineup and get your tickets. So thanks so much, Lee. Me too. Okay. Bye.
And that's our show. Many thanks to my special guest, Lee Brian Schrager, founder and director of the Food Network and Cooking Channel South Beach Wine and Food Festival, presented by Capital One, which is taking place May 20th to 23rd in South Beach. Their website is sobewff.org, and on social media at sobewffest, hashtag sobewff. Also, many thanks to my guest today, Diana Tandia, the chef and owner of Berber Street Food in New York City. Her website is berberstreetfood.com, and on social media, she's at Berber Street Food. You can follow me at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR and at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. Websites, bayerpublicrelations.com, sherrybayer.com, and allintheindustry.com. All of our shows are archived at heritageradionetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks to my engineer, Amanda Wang. Thanks again to Diana and Lee and Autumn Lewis from The Door. I'm Sherry Bayer. I'll be back next week with a new show. Hope you'll tune in then. Stay safe and well, and thank you for being part of All in the Industry. Bye. All in the Industry is powered by Simplecast. I'm Sherry Bayer, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, HRN is celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.